Welcome to the RPG Logic Podcast, the tabletop RPG podcast where we combine actual play with the critique and analysis of the game as played from the player and the game master perspective. I'm Toby, your host, and with me are my talented co-hosts, Charles and Dale. This podcast is inspired by listening to actual play podcasts by the Arcology and Roleplaying Public Radio, and advice podcasts by Fear the Boot, RPPR, and Happy Jacks, and reading way too many blog posts by the Angry DM and others about how to make your games better. I thought it might be interesting to do a podcast that combined the two. I would record our game sessions and then break in between scenes and discuss the plan, execution, and disaster that we just heard with one of the game's players. The game we are playing is Battlelords of the 23rd Century, a game by SSDC where the characters take the roles of space mercenaries in a dangerous future. The game was first released in the early 90s and involves a lot of mechanics and is pretty gear and skill heavy. There are a number of alien races to play, each of which does not always get along. This is where a lot of the fun comes in. Can your group of misfits who barely tolerate each other survive the dangerous missions they have been given? It's much more Star Wars meets the movie Aliens than Eclipse Phase transhumanism in tone. The setting we are playing is more cyberpunk in feel, with characters working for a galactic megacorporation, fighting a war against a shadowy planetary corporation with the backdrop of an immense city inspired by Tokyo meets Karachi. This podcast picks up after we had been playing the game for a while over Skype and map tools, and are restarting the game after about a year-long hiatus. I am the GM, and the players are Brian, Charles, and Dale. We pick up the game with character introductions. For some reason, Brian's introduction was cut off by the recorder, and he is playing Bob the Grim Tinker of Gula Gula, a sort of space dwarf mechanic.
Rassel Richard, Raz? What am I?
What is my character's name?
Jesuiter. Not a priest, an archaeologist.
Robert McDougal, also known as Rob Roy. He's a former bartender. Orion security specialist.
All right, as you recall, you are all troubleshooters employed by the Asteroid Mining Corporation, AMC. You are based on Pegasi and in the city of the Valley, which is an enormous, as you all know, an enormous city of approximately 100 million people, and overwhelmed by the number of people that live there, essentially. For the past 6 months, since the last game, you have been assisting the corporation wage a sort of shadow corporate war against the Kaltra Corporation after Kaltra staged a hostile takeover of one of the most valuable properties of AMC on the planet. The executive Ira Shui, who sort of led that effort to take over the mining concession, was an AMC employee and has not been found, not been brought to justice, not by you guys, and as far as you know, not by anybody else. So the first thing that we're going to start off with is that you have all been summoned to the private residence of Director Paul Hsu, who is the AMC planetary director. He lives on one of the basalt towers that are on the south side of the city. So he's got an estate up on top of one of the towers. And you are arriving by skimmer.
Those are sort of like the mini arcologies in the gated community?
The basalt towers are, it's a natural formation, sort of like Devil's Tower.
Oh, basalt.
So it's a long, it's a tall, like 200 meter tall
dark rock pillar.
Mm. Dark rock pillar. Mm. And there's basically a whole field of them every couple of kilometers. So that's where the richest people in the city live, up on top of these towers. The air is cooler than the stifling heat of the city itself, and it's a nice view. So you are in your skimmers headed, you're both flying. You're flying your Go skimmer?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
And don't we have
the rest of you are in the other one?
Yeah.
The other two of you are in the other one? So you have one Go Fast and one Go? Oh no, you just have Goes. Oh no, you've got a Go 2, which is a corporate Go 2, the SUV sized vehicle.
And then we've got that.
And then he's got his little
that we got.
He's got one of the little recovered. Yeah, it's tricked out a little bit, mm-hmm. but mostly it's decorative. It's not particularly fast, except for the modifications that you put on it.
Because I haven't played with it too much yet.
Yeah, so there's that as well. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
First thing we do is cut a skylight. for the Jezzatides to think of that through like Flintstone style.
My brains are like flapping.
Well, I don't think there's a passenger seat in it at the moment. There's a gun there.
There's a gun in the passenger seat?
Oh, that's right.
Okay. So that's where you're headed. What are you wearing, bringing with you?
Oh, this is a business meeting?
Yes, it's in the late evening.
Hour.
So, yeah. Like about 9 p.m.
My recently purchased duck personal defense shield.
Did you just say duck?
Yeah. It's the 12,000 credit 5-point flex shield, basically.
There you go.
So is there anything that makes those things actually go boom if you're wearing it?
A flex shield?
Yeah.
The fig.
No, but a fig will collapse it.
Yeah.
So this is where I wanted to use my custom Street 3 robe that I had to have 6 months to make to fit my frame. But I didn't have time to spec it out.
And my pistol, I suppose.
Well, then it's not quite ready.
Okay.
You've got
my regular robes and my staff. That's all I need. Just going to a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty.
And
I think I'll wear my
three pairs of and extra deodorant.
The armor.
And street extra clothes deodorant. Are three different pairs.
I have to wear my armor with all my tools.
Baseball.
And
okay.
Jailing pants.
Okay.
I'm not bringing my gun, just the grenade launcher.
You're not going to bring your gun, you're just going to bring the grenade launcher?
Well, it's in my hands.
So my arm. The one that's armed.
Yeah, I can't take that one off. Come on, I don't look normal. I don't look silly.
All right. Fly into a landing pad near the base of the tower. You can land both skimmers next to each other. There's plenty of room. There's a couple of other luxury skimmers down there. At the back of the landing area is a entrance into the complex.
Well, we're expected.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's nobody there.
Well, you know how to get to the place, right?
Yeah.
Should have brought the armor.
Yeah.
I want.
We should get carrying cases so that we can keep the armor in the trunk, and then just pull it out when we don't see it.
You can certainly. I mean, there's no problem with you putting the armor in the back.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have plenty of room walking in the door.
If we set up the armor in the back seat, will it allow us to get through the HOV4 lanes? Skyline.
That's an interesting idea.
I guess, I mean, we, as far as we know, we still have the meeting, so...
Yep.
There's a door?
Yeah, there's the main entry. It's a, you know, large sliding doors.
So this is like the landing pads in Empire?
Same concept, okay.
Yeah, just walk up and...
Okay, you walk up, you guys exit your vehicles, Mark, go up to the door, the door's open... an automated voice says, you basically enter into a small chamber, mm-hmm. I mean, it's maybe about the size of this room, 10 by 10, 20 by 20, something like that. And there is another set of doors and a series of scanners inside. And it said, please, an automated voice says, please pause here for scanning. Scanning, clear, and the other door's open.
Okay.
It didn't detect that I have a charge laser.
Clearly an ineffective scanner.
Yeah. Okay. Beyond there's a small complex inside, so there's a number of doors, but immediately ahead of you is a series of lift doors. So you know his mm-hmm. place is up the top. There's a directory, so you can see where
you're
going.
Did we not land near the top?
No, you landed near the bottom.
Oh.
For security reasons, they don't want you anywhere near the... They don't want you landing or flying anywhere near the top.
Aren't we the security?
Well,
sure, but they're not
for that building.
Clear just you guys to land up there.
Okay, so we take the elevator.
Yeah, press the button.
Yep. I get in the freight elevator.
You guys get in the elevator, take it to the top. It's very nice. It's all luxury. Upon your arrival at the top, the doors open. There's a small antechamber into just an opulent, very expensive, wealthy estate or apartment sort of, you know, dwelling. Mm-hmm. Doors open right in it. There is a Zendarian, you know, he's a blue skin, basically blue skinned human. Waiting there, bows. Please come this way.
Oh, well, so much for the bar idea.
So much for the what idea?
The bar idea.
The bar idea. Takes you through a small series of hallways to a very large room that opens out onto off the edge of the tower, and you can see just this. It's facing the city, and you can just see the lights of the city, everything laid out. It's an amazing sight. It's a large room. There's a bar in one corner, a wet bar in one corner, and couches. There's a fireplace. There's a pool. It's just pretty much everything you can imagine here. Very nice. There's a long mantle with a wide variety of art objects and artifacts and whatnot on it.
I look at the comm unit on the wall. I think that sounds pretty cool.
There's a nice comm unit on the wall, yeah. Looks like you can do a whole lot from that.
Is the person we're meeting waiting for us?
He's not in there at the moment. The guy says, Director Shu will be with you momentarily. Can I fix you some drinks?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll wander over to the bar. What do they have on display? Stuff.
Pretty much anything you can think of is there.
Oh, okay. Anything from Earth.
It's well stocked.
Anything from Earth inexpensive.
All right.
A large mug of grassroot extract juice.
Wheatgrass.
Wheatgrass equivalent.
I look at him, call me and go, huh? What? Keep poking at it.
That's going to explode.
All right. He goes over there and starts fixing drinks for you all. Gets the blender out to make the wheatgrass. Wheatgrass.
Extra thing. Thick, please.
Extra thick, okay. All right.
Do they have any Nectar of the Ram?
Nectar of the Ram.
Yeah.
They probably do not actually have Nectar of the Ram. Actually, this is a Ram Python planet as well, so yeah.
Sure.
Sure they might.
Oh, dear.
It doesn't sound like something you actually want to drink, though.
So I do. I drink more than Orion's. I just can't hold my liquor.
Oh, well, that'll be great.
Okay.
All right.
Business management. Thanks. I'm not going to get drunk, but I am going to enjoy the liquor.
Okay, it's only a few minutes. Only a few minutes wait.
That's probably best.
And Director Shu comes in. Thank you for meeting me at this hour. As you know, we've been involved in a war with Kaltra. We've been unable to pin down our competition and deliver a decisive blow. And you recall that the executive in charge of the Morris B concession, Iris Shui, is our turncoat.
She's the one who took off in the thing. Okay, basically, as soon as we showed up. All right.
Joined the competition. We have yet to locate her. I have my suspicions that there may be more traitors. We've made a contact in the planetary militia that I'd like you all to work with.
Okay. What's the name?
He's something of an alienist, so you'll be a good group to work with him. However, I have my suspicions about the planetary militia as well. I don't know whose side they're really on. And as he's talking, he's kind of walking around the room a little bit, walking along the mantelpiece.
I'm taking notes in my PCD.
Okay. He picks up a like a lead disc off the mantel. What is this?
Duck and cover.
Duck and cover.
Lead disc. Like we're compact disc CD or like just a...
Like a hockey puck? Hockey puck. Yeah, like a thin hockey puck.
Why don't we put that down and I'll take a look at it. If you don't know what it is in your house, it could be...
I would like each person to make a sighting check.
Oh, crap. Should have brought the credit.
So, you are... What is...
You are off of vision skills? Or off of...
So your base sighting check is going to be at minus 60.
Yeah, hold on.
Okay, my vision is 40. 5. So do it off of a vision or a sight?
Yeah, vision.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to roll.
Here, I can get you a set.
My vision's 45, so I'm at negative 15 to pass.
Mine says 95. Mm.
Could be.
15?
40?
40?
I mean, that's what I rolled.
And your vision is... down here someplace, maybe?
Should be.
You did things a little bit differently than me. Where's your... one of these is vision.
Yes, plus 15.
Plus 15, so base is 65. Okay. Charles, you notice, or Rob Roy, you notice out of the corner of your eye some movement, and there is auto fire.
The intention of that scene was to set the stage for the reboot of the game. We were intended to kind of lay the ground, like kind of explain where you had been and where you were immediately going and try and get you started in the action. And then after that was going to be an interaction scene where you would talk to the director, director Paul Hsu, and get some information from him. Clearly, you didn't have any opportunity to ask any questions really before the guys with guns kicked in the door and started shooting everything. So that second part of that scene didn't exactly work out. And I don't know if you guys noticed that there were quite a few railroad tracks, which is fine when you're kind of laying the groundwork. This is where we were, this is where what you guys are all doing. But there were, I think there was, I asked you maybe one question as to what you were doing, which was what equipment are you bringing with you to the meeting with the boss of the entire corporation that you work for, which really is not much of a decision, not much of a choice for you all to make.
Although I can tell you it will be a different choice next time.
Yeah. Yeah, I can certainly understand that. So the other thing that happened in that scene that I did not think worked particularly well was the scanner. When you went through the scanner, you chose your weapons, you or not, and you went into the scanner room, and it said all clear, no matter what. Now, I think that scene would have been a little bit more effective to tip you off that maybe something was not working right, if you'd gone through one of those scanners ever before and it had told you, no, you can't bring anything in with you. You know, it had detected the knife, it had detected the hand grenade, it had detected the laser or the pistol or whatever you might have had with you. If it had detected just about everything once before in the past, so you have some expectation, oh, this thing's going to go off no matter what we bring. We can try and smuggle stuff in, but it's going to go off. And then if it fails to work, even though Brian has had his character had the armband grenade launcher attachment, and the fact that it didn't detect that should have been a big tip off that something...
I think we're a little suspicious, but we were just sort of along for the ride. Yeah, and if we had been through it before, you're right. I think it would have been cluing us off a little bit more.
That's all I had on that scene. I think the other thing I had was at the end there, when the director picked up there's also supposed to be a clue at the end where the director picks up that disc off the counter and says, "Hey, what is this?" Right before the guys start shooting.
If that was a clue for, you know, game tie-in from future sessions, that would have been fine. But the timing made it seem an awful lot like it was a thing that was likely to blow up in any second and cause massive damage. So yeah. I was more likely to grab it and throw it out the atrium than look at it before I did it, kind of thing. So I'm not quite sure what the intention there was on your end, but that's kind of... the timing made it a little tricky on our end, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was just basically, he notices something's wrong, so he calls attention to it, and the thinking, I think, was that he was about to call for his security or somebody to come in and find out what had happened.
Well, I believe, in the wrap-up section of the session, I mentioned that
I was like, we should take a look at that, but we didn't get to that part. But I mean, that's always the tough part is when the scanner didn't go off. I think we were all sort of like, you know, thinking the metagame, something's wrong, because, you know, like when the villain goes running down the hallway and then disappears, but there's no convenient tapestry, everybody suddenly thinks, well, there's got to be a secret door here. It should have gone off, but at the same time, thinking about it as characters, it was easy because of course we're expected, of course we're going to show up lightly armed. You know,
well, you know, I think it wasn't a big deal with the scanner. I mean, it actually did what it was supposed to. It may not have elicited a lot of response on us, but it's not like we had a lot of choice at that point anyway, right? Being a railroad scene as it was. Now, I think maybe with the artifact, you may have missed a bit of an opportunity to create more suspense, because at that point, we were kind of already locked in. You could have had the artifact there and the guy saying, oh, what is this? Let me call security. He hits his ear thing and whatever and says, security, get up here right now, you know, and of course, at that point, you could say, well, security doesn't respond, and, you know, and then it's like, well, what's going on? And then you, like, you could have, like, some ominous noises outside with, like, what is that sound, you know? And then the guys could, like, swoop in and start shooting, but it kind of went straight from, oh, what's this artifact? Okay, are we supposed to be interested in the artifact, or is it going to blow up? And then all of a sudden there was shooting. It's like, you could have been toying with us a little bit more, probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. For a difficulty perspective, one of the original ideas for the scenario was to have three or four, a whole team of bad guys show up and start shooting at the director to take down his personal defense shield and then kill him. But as I was replanning the session, I thought that's not quite the way I wanted to go. And we did something different. Obviously the bartender, the treachery of the bartender, which we'll see in the next scene, kind of tied into that. So the original plan was originally to have once you guys go through the house and you get to the meeting with the director, bunch of stuff happening off screen in the background where the whole bad guy team comes in, neutralizes everyone in the house, and then attacks the director. And that is obviously not the way it ended up playing out.
It probably would have been non-survivable. I mean, four,
I was
going to
say, if you had
armed and armored
in there shooting, we would have all died.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
exactly. That's the big problem.
You know how we react to situations like that. You can't present us with a problem and expect us to walk away from it. So.
Right. No. And that's part of the reason why I ended up changing it is because having even the two guys that were there, they were pretty dangerous, as we'll see if you see. I guess we should move on to the next scene to discuss that.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
This has been the RPG Logic Podcast, released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to jovumdesign.com. Battle Lords of the 23rd Century is a product of SSDC. Links and details can be found in the show notes and at drobiumdesign.com/RPGlogic. Thanks for listening, and happy gaming.